Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Alex Beard about his beautiful new book, For the Birds, An Artist Aviary. From Alex Beard is always an occasion, and today we have the pleasure of celebrating For the Birds, An Artist Aviary, his new book just published. Alex is a New Orleans-based artist. His gallery is on Magazine Street, and he lives in the Garden District. He's the author of the popular Tales from the Watering Hole series for children, as well as the beautiful art book, A Brush with Nature, which illuminates his style of abstract naturalism. He's won awards for his art, his work in conservation, which includes his own Watering Hole Foundation, and his work on the U.S. National Board of Directors of the Lewa Wildlife Conservancy in Kenya. Alex, welcome.
Susan, it's always such a pleasure to be in your company.
And you too, Thank you. So for the birds, 100 beautiful portraits of birds, and you have seen them all. So what are some of your favorites?
Well, now, I have to say that I haven't seen them all.
Oh, you
Because
haven't?
Some of them are extinct. I mean, for example, the great auk.
Yes.
I'm old, but not that old.
You've seen many.
I've seen many of these in person. Some of my favorites, I don't look at it like, but it's like picking children, right?
You love
everything equally for different reasons. And I look at a book as a singular work of art as opposed to a compilation of works of art.
Mm-hmm.
It has to work with its own rhythm and pace visually and in terms of the flow page to page. So it would be maybe more accurate to say, do I like this book better than my other books?
Oh, no. I would never ask that.
There are some that I'm partial to just because I love the whimsy of the bird itself and then the artwork that came out of it. I think the flamingos drawing that's in here is not so bad, partly because I'm such a fan of Audubon. He did that iconic flamingo who's sort of bent at the neck. And so there's a tip of the cap to that as well.
Well, when I think of great bird artists, I think of you, I think of Audubon, I think of Walter Anderson.
Walter Anderson, amazing, yes.
And I particularly think of you with Anderson because you both have such distinctive visual imagery. I think I could pick out a bird by you and a bird by Anderson.
Yeah, for sure.
And you evolve that over time. So talk about that process, because when I look at this book, I see that you like the great swoop of birds, the great curves and, you know,
yeah,
flight.
That's 100% correct. I'd say the first part of that is that either it's a blessing or a curse, but whatever I make looks like I made it. Not intentionally.
Yeah.
It's just the way that my hand works, right? So it does have that distinctive quality to it. Then, in terms of a comparison to Walter Anderson, first of all, thank you very much, because he's such a great iconic artist from this part of the world. But we both utilize similar indigenous design elements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could see like in the back of a gator that he does, there's a certain kind of cross-hatching,
mm-hmm.
Which then is mimicked in the water and is then mimicked again in the air and that sort of thing. And it's all derived from, you know, totemic artwork that you see, Aboriginal artwork, Pacific sure. Northwest Indians, etc. And so I also utilize some of those sort of traditional indigenous from all over the world now, mind you.
Of course.
Elements. And so it would make sense that there's a correlation between the work that I do and the work that he does. And then, of course, the subject matter is not all that dissimilar, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're both sort of naturalists in our own odd way.
I don't know if I can see you lashing yourself to a tree during a hurricane and writing it out, though.
Alex. God, wouldn't it be great to be so courageous?
Wouldn't it?
Because it also has the element of Turner lashing himself to the mast.
Oh, yes.
In a storm in the North Sea. I do stick around for hurricanes. I guess that's about as good as I get.
Well, that's pretty brave. Yeah. I mean. So talk a little bit for our listeners about abstract naturalism, which is your style, your philosophy that you've evolved over time.
Abstract naturalism is a term that I came up with to describe the work that I made. Because a little bit, I mean, this is sort of funny since we're talking on the radio, talking about visual art on the radio.
I know,
it's a little bit like talking about visual art at a cocktail party, right? Mm-hmm. People ask you, what do you do? And they generally don't really care about the answer unless you can give them something that is fairly easily digestible so that then you could start a conversation. So sure. Abstract naturalism was the way that I came up with to be able to start that conversation. What it essentially is talking to is an interpretation of the intrinsic way in nature that things move. Mm-hmm. Both the visual mathematics of composition, which sounds quite formal, but is in fact a language to try to express the similarities that we see in our observable universe. So the most obvious example that I give to people is the spiral in the seashell. Right? Mm-hmm. You see that same spiral again and again throughout nature, from its smallest forms to its largest, including the entirety of the Milky Way, and all the way down to single-cell paramecium, you know, tiny yeah. little things that wrap around on themselves. And so if I'm trying to emulate the intrinsic way in nature that things move, I'm using the gesture, the fluidity of the gesture to start it. And then from that, I sort of pull the recognizable back out again. So if you think about abstract expressionism as the culmination of breaking down that which is real mm-hmm. into its component parts of movement and light and color, I'm coming back from that terminus to reintroduce life.
Right.
Right. Starting with the essence of the color and the movement and the light, and then looking. It's a little bit like a kid lying in the grass looking at the clouds and trying to say, oh, this one looks like a dragon and that one looks like an elephant. And I'm doing that from those gestures that I start with. The gestures are not, there's sort of a style of art which is mindless or thoughtless. I can't remember exactly what they call it, but it's one of those things where you sort of essentially are trying to get out of your own way. Right?
Automatic writing.
Automatic writing is a very good example of that, yeah. right? So it's not exactly that. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sending it in a certain direction.
So how long did it take you to get to that point, or was it with you from the very beginning?
I'm still working on it.
Still discovering
for sure.
it.
I mean, one of the things I like so much about being an artist is that there's no retirement date. Right? I mean, it's a lifelong pursuit. It's a yeah. marathon, not a sprint. All of those cliches are applicable because I love what I do. I don't always love what I make. But I love the doing it. I love the chewing on it. So the abstract naturalism, that sort of style started when I was quite young just because you'd spill ink on a page and try to turn it into something. Mm-hmm. And then it's been developing and developing over time. And the farther along I go, hopefully the more interesting it gets.
And I think you're one of the happiest artists I know. I never think of you as a suffering artist in the same
way. I'm very, very lucky, for sure. Now, do I have some demons that live on my shoulders? For sure, because we all do.
Yeah.
But in general, I count my lucky stars every day. I'm healthy. I have a fabulous wife and great kids. I live in a city that I love, and I get to pursue a lifetime of work that I love doing. I don't know how you could want more than that.
And people love your work.
That's very gratifying, mm-hmm. I have to say, and somewhat surprising constantly to me. it never ceases to amaze me. But I'm delighted about it, right?
Well, it's so distinctive. And so, I mean, once you vibrate with your work, you vibrate with it always, I think, you know?
Yeah, it does seem that way.
You know?
I mean, I make the art for... I don't make it for myself. I do it for myself, but I make it for everyone else. So it's nice to have that connection.
One of the things I love about your birds is that they're never cute. They're not sweet or cute. You know, and even penguins suffer
yeah.
from cuteness, but your penguins seem a little fierce.
Well, maybe that's going back to their dinosaur selves.
Oh, let's think about that.
Yeah, I mean, birds are a fascinating subject. First of all, they're ubiquitous in our lives,
yes.
Right? You see them everywhere you go. Whether you're in the middle of a crowded city or in the farthest flung desert, you're going to find a bird, and everywhere in between. Then they have such personality.
Mm-hmm.
They have these anthropomorphic qualities where we really see ourselves in them.
Oh, we do.
You know, which is so interesting because there's so many different sides to ourselves. It's one of the reasons that I've always liked working in naturalism as an art form, flora and fauna in particular, because it's a means of expressing personality without obviously beating you over the head with it. And then hopefully, birds in particular are conducive to whimsy and movement, color, plumage, their legs and their necks and their beaks and their color and the oddities of their variety and the grace of how they fly, etc., makes them a great subject matter as an artist. And in their full panoply, it's not a singular thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many different kinds of birds, and they behave so differently that it really allows for the artist, and in this case me, to explore lots of different aspects to their birdiness, which then in turn... their birdiness, right? Which then in turn is kind of a reflection back on our own personness.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you just admit they're fun. They're fun to draw.
They're fun to draw. That's not to say that I haven't struggled with a few of them trying to get them right, because of course one does. But they have the quality of just sort of emerging on the page without you having to force it.
Mm-hmm.
The less you have to force it, I find, the more successful the artwork tends to be.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Alex Beard about his beautiful new book, For the Birds, An Artist Aviary. Well, the other thing I was interested to see is that you wrote poems to accompany some of these drawings and paintings.
I wrote quite a few poems, yes.
I know. I just enjoyed them so much.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. When I was first putting the book together, I had it in my mind that it couldn't just be an anthology of birds with their Latin names, right? That wouldn't really be... It wouldn't be appropriate to the way that I work, and ultimately wouldn't be that all that interesting, and was never going to be as good as the people who are actually putting together incredible illustrated anthologies of birds. So it had to have its own personality. And then I thought that maybe I would go through history and find poets that had written about birds and use their poems. You know, the most obvious would be like you use The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe, and then you have a drawing of a raven. But that seemed a little... shallow. So I thought, you know, if I'm going to do this thing, I should do it myself. And so I was in the West Indies last summer for a month working on a couple of paintings, and I brought a journal with me, and I sat down and I wrote all the poems in the book over the course of a month. And you just get into the flow of doing it.
Of thinking in poems.
Yes, thinking in poems, thinking in meter, rhyme schemes, and inflection.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, once again, like starting anything, you grind your gears a bit at the beginning, and then it starts to flow. And so I did. I wrote a bunch of poems, and some of them I even like.
Well, I hope you like The Dove, because that's one I want to hear.
I will read you The Dove. I do like The Dove. It's the first poem that I put in the book. I thought that it would be a good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
So here's The Dove. Let us start with what we know, the peaceful dove that's all aglow. He gives us hope to see the light and helps us want to do what's right. For in his skies we look to find a calm serenity of the mind. In great events we mark with love. What do we release? A dove. Sign of purity and grace, innocence clear upon its face. And when rage burns to heated bout, an olive branch will snuff it out. For doves exist as metaphor, a hero from a long-told lore. In and through their eyes we see the kind of thing we'd like to be, free to fly and sing and live, at one with what the world can give.
I love thinking of you in the West Indies writing that.
Yeah, right. Listening to the, you know, doves are fabulous because everywhere I go in the world, not everywhere, but many of the places that I go in the world, you hear that great cooing of the doves.
In so many uptown porches.
Uptown porches, East African bush, West Indian forest. Mm-hmm. They're just there. And it's such a, it's a sound that makes me feel at home, even when I'm quite far away.
Now, how about the woodpecker?
The woodpecker's another one.
It's a sound we all know.
Yes, the woodpecker we all know. And I have to give my wife a little credit here. She loves, loves, loves woodpeckers. And will stop you in mid-sentence as you're walking through the forest if she hears a woodpecker. And so this poem is, it's not exactly dedicated to her, but probably should be.
It should be. You can dedicate it to her.
I can. In fact, Amy, this poem is dedicated to you.
Good.
The woodpecker. When you're in the woods out strolling, and a rapping sound comes rolling through the sunlit canopy, even if you cannot see, a woodpecker's there nearby to give some bark a hungry try. It's a sound I've always loved, like knocked on doors with hands ungloved. It fills the silence with a tapping, not unlike a man that's clapping. It makes me feel that someone's there to walk with me and truly share what's to relish in this life, away from all the strain and strife.
Ah, it's the ungloved hands I love so much.
Yes, right? That line, that...
You should be proud of that.
Thank you. Thank you. So, you know, blind squirrels and nuts.
I once had a woodpecker who developed this attachment to a shutter on my upstairs house.
Uh-oh.
And so in the mornings, I would have that sound every morning.
Yeah.
Both a little upsetting, but still, I enjoyed it, you know, at the same time.
Now, of course, that does lead you down to what's it looking for in your shutters, which is maybe...
Yeah. So this is a distillation of your travels as well, this book.
In some ways, for sure. It's not a linear distillation, as in it's not done by country and continent and expedition.
Yeah, but it's arranged very carefully.
But yes, well, it is arranged in a fashion so that the book will flow and that birds that aren't related to each other don't live side by side, if that makes any sense to you, right? I mean, there's so many birds in the world that if you want to sit down and try to do a bird book, you have to have some kind of order to how you're going to put it together. Now, the distillation of the travel part is that that is partly talking to my experiences with birds that have come about unintentionally throughout the years and various trips where I'm looking for other things, right? If I'm out looking for, you know, when I'm in East Africa, I like to go look for elephants. And so I'm looking for elephants. But what do I see? I see vulture and guinea fowl and lilac-breasted rollers and superb starlings and go-away birds and
I love the go-away bird.
Yeah, so then you see the eagles above you, and all of that's laying the context for the thing that I'm going to do. And that's true. You were talking about being in the West Indies and doing the poems there. Well, just think about the layers of birds that are around you at all the time. They're the little birds that are hopping around in the bushes, and then there are the doves, like we talked about, that are sitting in the trees, and the hummingbirds that are flitting back and forth. But then there's also that whole layer of seabirds that are riding the thermals and diving into the water and all of their variety also. I think of them in some ways like fish around a reef.
Oh, what a lovely thing.
Right? You know, you go diving and you're out in this big blue expanse, and then you come upon the reef and there's all this variety, tiny and large and colorful and in schools and by themselves and in great variety, all interacting amongst each other and in their own little particular ways. And of course, birds are the same. So that, you know, that sets up to me something which is both very interesting to experience, but then opens a huge field for what am I going to paint and draw.
Of course. And you get right down to the egg and the feather.
I do. Well, I start with eggs because that's, you know,
so beautiful.
What comes first, the chicken or. And then the feathers I wanted something where I could have a place mark for each chapter as they began.
Mm-hmm.
Just something to break up the pace a little bit. And then birds' feathers are in their own right unique and beautiful.
Oh, yes.
So I thought a collection of feathers might be nice to add as well.
Now, I have a question I've always wanted to ask you.
Please.
So, do you have a spirit animal? What would it be?
Goodness. Do I have a spirit animal? I wish I had a better answer for you, as in, oh, I went on an ayahuasca trip and they told me I'm a jaguar.
But it wouldn't surprise me if you had that one either.
but I haven't had that direct. If I had a spirit animal, I mean, I was born in the year of the dog, and I do love dogs, not just as companions, but in them as themselves.
And we should say you have a new puppy at this very moment.
We have a new puppy, as of yet unnamed. By the time this is on the radio, hopefully this new puppy will have a name.
Watch this spot.
That's exactly right. I can tell you that the animal that intrigues me the most are elephants.
Really?
Their enormity, their grace, their intelligence, the relationships they have amongst each other, the extreme peace and violence can cohabitate. This lumbering creature that could be so graceful and like a bull charging at the same time.
And its association with memory.
Well, memory, and you look at an elephant's eye, there's an awful lot going on in there. And there's for sure recognition. And I've spent a lot of time with elephants in my life, partly, I suppose, because they fascinate me so much. But so I've seen some things that really let you know that we're sort of on equal footing. You know, two old bulls that haven't seen each other in a long time that get together and put their trunks in each other's mouths as like a hug. The relationship between a mother and its sort of little Toto, its little baby, and then the little adolescents themselves playing inside these family groups, they represent all the things that I so like about humanity without any of the parts that I'm not so crazy about.
Oh, Alex, to say you've seen some things is an understatement. I mean,
yeah. Well, and I'm still looking.
I know. Thank goodness for all of us. We've been talking with the artist Alex Beard, whose glorious, gorgeous new book is For the Birds, An Artist Aviary. You can meet him Saturday, October 4th during Art for Art's Sake from 6 to 9 at the Alex Beard Gallery at 3926 Magazine Street. Alex, thank you so much. You always make my day.
Oh, I love being here, and I love public radio.
Thank you.
So thank you for having me.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Blue Cypress Books and novelist Jamie Attenberg host author Patricia Lockwood Saturday, September 27th at 5 to celebrate the launch of her highly anticipated new novel, Will There Ever Be Another You? The event is off-site in the Bywater, so tickets are required. Check out bluecypressbooks.indielight.org. John Shelton Reed talks about his new book, The Ramos Gin Fizz, Monday, September 29th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Rosary O'Neill and Rory O'Neill, mother-daughter co-authors, sign The Haunted Guide to New Orleans, Tuesday, September 30th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Robert F. Smith discusses and signs Lead Boldly, Seven Principles from Dr. Martin Luther King, Thursday, October 2nd at 6 at Baldwin & Company. This is a ticketed event. Clint Smith discusses and signs How the Word Is Passed, Remembering Slavery and How It Shaped America, a new edition of his book for young readers, Saturday, October 4th at 4 at Baldwin & Company. This is a ticketed event. The crew of Joan of Arc presents Salon de Jeanne d'Arc Part 1, first Saturday. That's September 27th from 2 to 5 at the Old Ursuline Convent, 1112 Charter Street. This event is in partnership with the Catholic Cultural Center at the convent. Free and open to the public, no registration required. Doors open at 1:30. It'll begin with a meet and greet and welcome remarks, and at 2, there will be a panel discussion, Yat Catholic, New Orleans Catholicism Contributions to the Global Catholic Dialogue. That panel will be moderated by Chris Wiseman of the Catholic Cultural Center of New Orleans. At 3:15, there will be another discussion, Brand Identity in Medieval Times, Heraldry and Beyond. That's by Amanda Helm, marketing professor at Xavier University of Louisiana, and crew de Jeanne d'Arc, co-captain. At 4:15, Mythologizing Women Warriors, Joan of Arc and Daughters of the New Year, a talk by reigning queen Megan Holt, executive director of One Book, One New Orleans. The event continues the following weekend, Saturday, October 4th at 1:30 at the East Bank Regional Library. Visit joanofarcparade.org for details. It's time to vote for the One Book, One New Orleans selection for 2026. Visit the group's Facebook page for info. The three choices are the nonfiction work Brown Pelican by Ryan Fertel, the poetry collection Libre by Sky Jackson, and the novel Far Away From Here by Ambata Kazi. The really big event coming up September 25th through 28th is Faulkner for All, presented by the Pirate Sally Faulkner Society and the English-speaking Union. Special guests include the Countess of Derby, Caroline Stanley, whose new book is The American Journal of Edward Jeffrey Stanley, 14th Earl of Derby, The Making of a Prime Minister. Other guests include National Book Award winner Justin Torres, Claire Hoffman, author of Sister Sinner, The Miraculous Life and Mysterious Disappearance of Amy Simple McPherson, former Louisiana poet laureate Julie Kane, essayist and fiction writer Andrew Lamb, novelist and diarist Thomas Mallon, and Faulkner authorities John Shelton Reed, Penny Morrill, Robert Sinclair, Lisa C. Hickman. Fiction writers include Robert Olin Butler, Yuri Herrera, Karen Essex, Maura Crone, Beth Ann Fennelly. Poets, Roger Kamenetz, Bill Lavender, and Dalt Wonk. Nonfiction writers, Errol Barron, Nancy Dixon, Peter Wolfe, Randy Fertel, photographer Josephine Sacobo, and publishers and authors of books about that lovable runaway dog, Scrim. Publisher Susan Schott and authors Margaret Orr and Michelle Cheremy, along with illustrator Matt Renard. The theme of this year's conference is Embracing the Marginalized, and there will be special sessions about the 50th anniversary of the fall of Saigon and the literature of war. Check out FaulknerSociety.org for the complete schedule. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.